Hello there. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Our first stop today is in Morocco. And according to the Financial Times in the United Kingdom, here we have another month, another quid pro quo. This from an editorial. Morocco last week became the fourth Arab nation this year to normalize diplomatic relations with Israel under a deal negotiated by the U.S. All of these pacts have been transactional. The United Arab Emirates got the green light to buy advanced U.S.-made F-35 fighter jets in return for recognizing Israel, while Sudan was removed from the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. Morocco also secured something it has wanted for a long time: U.S. recognition of its annexation of the vast desert territory of Western Sahara. No other Western country has recognized Morocco's claim to Western Sahara. For the U.S. to do so, quote, will embolden Moroccan regimes already accused of human rights violations in the territory to do more. Worse, it risks further destabilizing a region that has proved a fertile recruiting ground for Islamist terrorism, unquote. It's a dangerous time for such an intervention, according to the newspaper and media giant Al Jazeera in Qatar. Western Sahara, about the size of New Zealand, is home to the Sahrawi people, who've been agitating for their own country ever since Spain ended its colonial occupation in 1975. Morocco, a former French colony, was eager to exploit its southern neighbor's abundant reserves of phosphate, and which is a key ingredient in fertilizer, its fish stocks, and its land access to the rest of Africa. And it annexed Western Sahara soon after Spain left. The Polisario Front, a Sahrawi separatist movement supported by neighboring Algeria, waged an independence war for 15 years until the United Nations brokered a ceasefire in 1991. The conflict has remained frozen until just a few weeks ago, when Moroccan troop incursions prompted the Polisario Front to renounce the ceasefire. And now, with tensions high, the U.S. is saying that most Sahrawis can hope for is limited autonomy under overarching Moroccan control. The paper thinks that this is a recipe for revolt in the region. Only time will tell. Outer space isn't as dark as it ought to be. In fact, it's twice as bright as astronomers had expected. Researchers came to this surprising conclusion after examining images from NASA's New Horizons spacecraft, which whizzed past Pluto in 2015 and is now more than 4 billion miles from Earth, and therefore clear of much of the inner solar system's light contamination. Those images were processed to remove all known sources of light, namely stars in the Milky Way and all other known galaxies. There was still a huge amount of unexplained light, equivalent, in fact, to all of the light from the known galaxies that they had stripped out. There's something out there unknown. The universe is not completely dark, and we don't know yet completely what it comprises. And the most likely explanation is that there are more faint galaxies or clusters of stars out there than we know about. Other possibilities are that black holes are pumping extra energy into the darkness, or that brightness is somehow originating from the mysterious dark matter that is thought to fill much of the universe. And still another potential explanation is that we just messed up and we missed a light source or camera artifact that we should have figured out. In any event, I offer a fourth. And maybe this is a signal that Darth Vader is returning. But now, on to something entirely different and earthborn, and that is panda bears. And the topic is very unlike anything that you would have expected. The topic is about why pandas love horse manure. Now, this sounds like the start of a bad joke. You know, why did the giant panda rub horse manure all over his body? But it's actually a question that has stymied scientists for more than a decade. And now they have an answer. The animals do it to keep warm. Researchers first spotted this bizarre behavior in China's Xingling Mountains 13 years ago. To investigate further, they set up motion-sensitive cameras and over a 12-month period recorded pandas slathering themselves in horse poop an astonishing 38 times. When the researchers looked at temperature records, they found that the pandas were smearing only on particularly cold days. They also noted that the pandas used only dung that was less than 10 days old. And on analyzing some of this fresh manure, they found it contained natural compounds that, when tested on mice, improved the animal's tolerance to cold. Maybe it's like Vicks VapoRub, or even, how about Tiger Balm? It's time for vintage takeout. What I'm talking about is grab-and-go meals, huh? It might be all the rage now, but the ancients also craved convenience. And so takeout food was available back in Rome. When in Rome, there were snack bars, or they were called popino. Popino. And they had counters that opened directly onto the streets of ancient Rome, offering ready-to-eat options that included lentils, meats, cheeses, green vegetables, fish sauce, and even nuts. But if we go to Mesoamerica, to the Aztec realm, tamales were a common portable food for warriors and hunters in prehistoric Mesoamerica. News of the delicacy spread after the Spanish friars visited Aztec street markets in the 16th century. And they found vendors stuffing corn husks with rabbit meat and honey. And in South Asia, there are Indian pancakes. These crispy crepes made with fermented rice and lentils are described in Tamil literature as early as the 6th century. Originally a popular South Indian breakfast food, dosas have now become an affordable street food option around the world, often served with a choice of chutneys. Sounds good to me. And then there's British ingenuity. Talking about sandwiches here. The 4th Earl of Sandwich reportedly slapped meat on bread so he could eat without leaving the card table. The innovation fed his gambling obsession and revolutionized handheld food in the West. Now, Americans eat more than 200 million sandwiches a day. I can't wait for mine. Did you know that those blue jeans you're wearing were dyed with indigo? But indigo was banned when it reached the West. It might seem odd to outlaw a pigment, but that's exactly what European monarchs did in a strangely zealous campaign against indigo. The ancient blue dye, extracted in an elaborate process from the leaves of the bushy legume Indigofera tinctoria, was first shipped to Europe from India and Java in the 16th century. To many Europeans, using the dye seemed unpleasant. The fermenting process yielded a putrid stench, not unlike that of a decaying body, according to the notes of one James Sullivan in his book, Genes. Unlike other dyes, indigo turns cloth vivid blue only after the dyed fabric has been in contact with air for several minutes, a mysterious delay that some found unsettling. Plus, indigo represented a threat to European textile merchants who had invested in woad, a homegrown source of blue dye. They played on anxieties about the import in a deliberate smear campaign, and weavers were told that it would damage their cloth. A Dutch superstition held that any man who touched the plant would become immediately impotent. Governments got the message. Germany banned the devil's dye, Teufelsfarbe, for more than 100 years, beginning in 1577, while England banned it from 1581 to 1660, and in France, in 1598, King Henry IV favored woad producers by banning the import of indigo, and in 1609 decreed that anyone using the dye would be executed. Still, the dye's resistance to running and fading could not be denied. And by the 18th century, it was all the rage in Europe. It would be overtaken by synthetic indigo, developed by the German chemist Johann Friedrich Wilhelm Adolf von Baer, a discovery that was so far-reaching that it was awarded a Nobel Prize in 1905. Imagine that. And now I must tell you about the passing of several very prominent people in the world of travel and of cartoons. First of all, Ken Spears passed away. And in the late 1960s, CBS executive Fred Silverman enlisted Ken Spears and his creative partner Joe Ruby to create a new kids' TV cartoon. He wanted the show to be modeled after the 1940s radio drama I Love a Mystery, but with kids as the stars. Spears and Ruby initially had four teenage rock musicians solving mysteries with the help of a feisty sheepdog. But the pooch slowly morphed into a cowardly Great Dane, and after 15 or so drafts, became the undisputed star of the show. Silverman would name the animal Scooby-Doo after hearing Frank Sinatra scatting, "Dooby-dooby-doo, Scooby-Doo, where are you?" premiered in 1969, and would remain on screen in various forms for the next five decades, becoming the most spun-off series in TV history. The other person in passing was Jan Morris, a travel writer who broke boundaries. As a celebrated journalist, historian, and travel writer, Jan Morris mined the globe for subject matter. But she was perhaps best known for a more personal journey. Having come to prominence as James Morris, a dashing newsman who joined Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay on their historic 1953 ascent of Mount Everest, Morris stunned Britain by transitioning into Jen, becoming one of the world's first prominent transsexuals. She wrote about it in the book Conundrum, a 1974 bestseller. Both pre- and post-transition, Morris was revered for her stylish prose and staggering output. As a journalist, she covered Adolf Eichmann's trial in Israel. She visited Hiroshima after the bomb. Her more than 45 books included a three-volume history of the British Empire influential travel accounts such as Venice in 1960 and Hong Kong in 1988. News from the business world. And now we have an exodus. More firms are abandoning Silicon Valley. Oracle is leaving Silicon Valley after 43 years, joining other tech firms that have fled California. The software maker is one of Silicon Valley's older success stories, with roots in Santa Clara, California, since 1977. Its announcement last week about moving its headquarters to Austin came shortly after Hewlett-Packard Enterprise revealed plans to leave San Jose for Houston. Fine. Data analytics company Palantir relocated to Denver this summer, and Tesla CEO Elon Musk announced recently that he had moved to Texas. So, looks like the last one out should turn out the lights. California is not enjoying a good 2020. And in Europe, we have this. Europe is considering rules for tech giants. The European Union is considering two bills that would vastly expand its role as tech enforcer. The proposed legislation requires big tech powers like Facebook and Amazon to submit to yearly external audits and new transparency requirements. The proposed rules would also ban anti-competitive practices such as tying together multiple services. Regulators would be empowered to levy fines of up to 6% or 10% of annual worldwide revenue, which could add up to billions of dollars. And then there's this information about the business world. Analysts project that Pfizer and Moderna will generate $32 billion in COVID-19 vaccine revenue in the coming year. The U.S. government will pay almost $2 billion to Pfizer for the first 100 million doses of its vaccine. And then in China reported a record trade surplus of $75 billion in this past November. It was propelled by an unexpected 21% surge in exports compared with last year. Leading the jump were exports to the United States, which climbed 46% to $52 billion, which was also a record. And Mackenzie Scott, the ex-wife of Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, has given away $4 billion of her $56 billion fortune in just 4 months. The money was split between gifts to 384 groups. I'm still waiting for mine. How about you? There are a lot of people out there, though, who could use some of that. We finish up our business news this week. Something about video. Well, other studios will not follow Warner. Other major studios aren't rushing to break the theatrical window in 2021. After Warner Media's stunning announcement that it would release an entire 2021 slate on HBO Max at the same time the movies hit the theaters, effectively killing its cinema business, Viacom CBS CEO Bob Bakish said he made a point to emphasize certain movies are made to see in theaters. Studios are watching Warner's results carefully to inform their future decisions. And now I think it's about time for us to head toward the end of our program. And as Willie Nelson says, and then we'll be on the road again. Well, until next time, I'm Dan Dillman, asking you, first of all, take care, but you be safe. Wear your mask, social distance, because that helps all of us. Have a good day, my friends. The sun is shining here. I hope it's shining where you are. Tune in to 101.5 to hear some more, a little of this, a little of that. You can never really guess what you're going to hear. You might hear about pandas, and you might hear about light and space. Or then again, you might hear about indigo or something very similar. So you come back. I'll be here waiting for you. Today, I hope it's a good one for you. Goodbye.